York. I'm Sue Goodwin.
This is the Shai Rana Show with your host Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAI-FM.
والسلام نوبيا by Alsara and the Nubatones. For those of you who are not familiar with the band, it's actually the lead singer lives in Brooklyn and plays there often. And we've played their music on the show before, and I would highly recommend that you check them out and look out for any concerts they might do. They've done concerts here at the University of Maryland a few years ago, and it was incredible. I was in attendance. And the reason why we're playing Alsara and the Nubatones today is because we have with us Fatima Ahmad, who is the founder of Zineb for Women in Development. This is an organization that's working in Sudan under the worst conditions right now, in a story that's totally being underreported because of the racism of our media, specifically the anti-Black racism that we encounter in terms of what our mainstream media cares to report about as a humanitarian crisis. But before that, I just wanted to update you, before we talk with Fatima, I wanted to update you on some important news, because despite the fact that we have the genocide is continuing in the most brutal way, there's been almost 50 days of in terms of food being blocked, total blockage of food from Gaza, as people die of starvation while they're bombing them in their tents, while they're killing their journalists and medics. At the same time, the defiance here in the United States is actually not ebbing, but flowing, really. Today we got the good news that pro-Palestinian activist Mohsen Mahdawi, who they tried to put away, was released today, despite all odds, after a federal judge judged favorably in his case. And you need to, as my fellow programmer David Zirin said, you know, we need to get some of that courage in our veins, because the first declaration that he made was addressing Trump and saying, "I'm not afraid of you." Every movement should take courage from this man. This is what we meant when we said that that Palestine is the litmus test for global justice. And as we also, with the release of the documentary on the Vietnam War today on Netflix, which shows you that the Vietnam War became the litmus test for global justice, and how the women's movement and the civil rights movement grew because of it. This is what's happening today with the Palestinian issue. Everything we said is coming true. And thirdly, we have the University of San Francisco committing to divestment under the worst conditions possible because of the pressure from the students and the faculty. That is divestment, of course, from weapons specifically as related to Israel and the genocide that's happening. So that's another piece of good news. Another piece of good news is the people who had attacked the encampments that were happening last year are starting to be arrested and charged with battery. In this case, today, another piece of good news is this Beverly Hills resident who attacked the UCLA encampment with a stick while they slept. He has been charged with battery. And so this is the beginning of a slew of charges. Of course, these people, usually what they do, they enroll in the IOF in the military in Israel, and they escape there to live peacefully and in the protection of the state there. alongside all the pedophiles that have taken refuge in Israel. And lastly, and most importantly, is everybody should be out to the May Day events tomorrow. Tomorrow is the International Workers' Day around the world and in the United States. Labor Day is not our day. It's International Workers' Day, and that's what they took away from us. That's an American tradition that spread around the world and then was snatched from American workers. People are going to be protesting around the mall in terms of DC starting around 4 p.m. There's even events before, so check out what are the May Day events and join them. It won't be just labor, it'll be people from all walks of life that are resisting this present regime. And also in Baltimore, there's going to be a dozen or so labor unions and about 35 organizations organizing Labor Day events, one starting or May Day events starting at the entrance of Camden Yards at 4 p.m. tomorrow. It's really critical that you do this and know that the outcome is going to have a great effect, especially in the wake of the fact that tens of thousands of workers with SEIU protested yesterday against this fascist regime in Los Angeles. And it's really important. This is where the power lies among workers. This is where we can throttle this fascism and weaken it that's approaching. We're the tide is turning, trust me. You just have to show up. So with that, I'm going to transition to talking with Fatima Ahmad, who took the time from a very important project in Sudan. This is such an underreported story, what's happening in Sudan, in terms of, for example, what the RSF is doing, what the United Arab Emirates is doing in support of the RSF, the starvation, the rape, the sexual violence that's being committed against the women. But on the positive side, and we're also going to talk with Fatima about this, about these neighborhood-based community groups that are being formed to protect especially women and girls. And Fatima is the founder of Zenab for Women in Development, and she's a leader and advocate for Sudanese women and girls, and she's worked tirelessly to build this organization. And this Fatima's dedication to this organization has its roots in childhood. As the eldest daughter of Zainab Muhammad Noor, she witnessed every moment of her mother's struggle and aspiration to advocate for the girls' education and women's empowerment in Sudan. And she was influenced by her mother. Fatima actively fought for fellow female students' rights at the University of Gezira in Wad Madani, Sudan, during the Eastern Sudan famine crisis in 1983 to 85. Fatima and her colleagues initiated a series of volunteer activities to serve the affected population, some of whom became part of this organization team today. Welcome, Fatima.
Welcome, Zain, and welcome all your audience and listeners of the radio show. Thank you so much for having me to talk today. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome, and thank you for taking the time from your the very important work that your organization Zenab is doing. And I also wanted to let you know that if there's any thing that you want to also explain in Arabic, I'm happy to translate. I want to start out, Fatima, with what is the work that Zainab is doing today in light of what's happening in terms of the attacks on Sudanese women?
Okay, thank you so much. Yes, actually what Zainab is doing since the beginning of the war, definitely we have many programs on the grounds in line with Zainab for Women Development Organization objectives in terms of poverty alleviation, economic empowerment of women, in promoting health, reproductive health rights of women, girls' education, promoting girls' education, because as you mentioned that it is we are following our mother legacy in terms of fighting for girls' rights for education since 1941. So this is also one of the most important objectives, and we are doing a lot of work around that. And other economic empowerment of women, legal empowerment, political empowerment, and so many programs. And in our program for economic empowerment of women, we work really with, at the grassroots and at the rural area with the women farmers and women pastoralists. And this is a very good program on the ground since 2007. And still we are doing this even despite the war and despite all these difficulties inside Sudan. With the help of definitely some of our partners, because food security was in jeopardy because of the war, and many productive area in Sudan is out of production cycle since 2 years. But we still in Gadarif, which is also one of most agriculture important agriculture area in Sudan, we've been able to support many of the small-scale farmers, even men, male and female, but we concentrate on female farmers. Besides this, since the beginning of the war, we are, as first responder on the ground, we are doing all we can to help the Sudanese people affected by war, who are become IDPs from Khartoum in the beginning, Khartoum area. After that, it came Jazeera area, which is at the heart of middle of Sudan. And hundreds of thousands of IDPs inside Sudan moved either to the eastern part of Sudan, which to eastern states, number one state in eastern Sudan, neighboring Jazeera is Gadarif state, which we are located and which our office is working until now. And this is one of our main important regional office for Zainab, the headquarter office in Khartoum, but is being destroyed actually also by this war. And so Gadarif is serving now the whole Sudan, and through the Gadarif office, we been able to support and to work for our humanitarian aid and other programs. Also in Kassala, we have a small office, Kassala, eastern part of Sudan. So this is why myself, as women advocate or as women-led organization, representing women-led organization, I saw all these local initiatives, including us, we really doing all we can, and we've been doing very good job on the ground as first responders, youth group, local initiatives. We supporting different programs like this kitchen and called Takaya, where in each place where the active fight is in Omdurman or Khartoum or Khartoum Bahri, or even in Darfur, in different area in Darfur, even Al Fashir. And now when I hear you talking about this genocide and also the siege around, and this is committed for also now is going on in Darfur, unfortunately, 20 years or 20 something years after the first genocide. Now also Darfur in very bad shape, especially Al-Fashir, because there is no food or no people can go out or in, and those people on the camps, Zamzam or Abshok camps, or all these years now being forced to live outside Al-Fashir because they active fight since this 2 years. and the food to reach over there is very difficult, and water definitely is a big issue. So this is why Al-Fashir and this area in Darfur also is still in big problem in terms of killing civilians, or all over Sudan, unfortunately, hundreds of thousands of civilians being killed during this war as being caught between these warring two parties, or now we don't know how many parties who are fighting inside Sudan, because many militias now inside Sudan fighting each other. So this is what is the issue. But we, as Zainab organization, we've been able to attract some funds from some of the women international organizations, including Women for Women International and another organization called Madre here in the United States. And we really done a lot with this support to work for IDBs inside Sudan, in different parts of Sudan, not only Gadarif or Kassala, also in different parts, as I mentioned, Kordofan, North Kordofan, West Kordofan, North Darfur, South Darfur, and all this work with the women group inside these communities or inside these sites. This is why our work as women-led organization is really making big difference, because not only we work as Zainab, but we also support from what we get as a humanitarian aid, whatever resources, we share it with other women groups on the grounds who are also working as first responders in these communities or in this part of Sudan, Northern Sudan. Also, and I'm really thank you for this song, which is, as you mentioned, is Nubian songs, and it is about peace and about reunion, because now, because of this war, is too much division between Sudan, even one family being displaced to different part of Sudan or even outside Sudan to neighboring countries. So even my own family, we are now also many displaced inside Sudan or in Egypt or some in Uganda. So it is really big meaning for me, this song, besides demanding or asking for peace, also for reunion of those people of Sudan who've been affected by this war big time. So this is what we are doing. We've been able to support thousands of women and girls and all displaced people inside Sudan, as I mentioned. But in Gadarif, we have big work, because, as I mentioned, also Gadarif received many of those IDBs from Khartoum, from Jazeera, from Sinnar, from different parts of Sudan. And still many of them there, and thousands or tens of thousands. They were all actually more than hundreds of thousands in Gadarif, in Kassala. So by this resources, we've been able to support in terms of food distribution, dignity kits for girls and women. And we work with those women. And unfortunately, this war is being fought on the bodies of the women. And they use the rape and all sexual abuses as weapon of war, unfortunately. Until now, this being going on in different parts of Sudan. And so we've been able to support many of those women and girls who've been affected by sexual abuses. And also we have trauma counseling and psychological support for women and girls. And we've been able with this help to establish pregnant center for pregnant women in Gadarif, which serves more than 500 women and more than 500 children being those women being helped to get their children or their newborn. And after that, also they receive necessary support in terms of clothes or whatever they need after they get birth, and also for the baby. We've been doing a lot. This is why I really advocate for the empowerment and for resource mobilization to empower the first responders on the ground, including women-led organizations and women group and youth group. People talk about the emergency rooms. Yes, emergency room is very important. They are doing very good on the ground. But other initiatives also, and other groups, they are doing also very good on the ground, and they need to have attention, and they need to have resources. And also one of the sad things regarding the war in Sudan, also receives no attention from the international communities. And still, until now, there is a big gap in terms of humanitarian resources needed, even by the international organization, even needed by the UN agencies. Many times, Secretary General of the UN keep talking about how much they need to being able to help the people of Sudan, and always describe the humanitarian crisis in Sudan is the worst in the world, because 25 million needs to humanitarian aid assistance inside Sudan and neighboring countries like Egypt, Uganda, East Chad, South Sudan, and other countries. But unfortunately, yet very minimal resources until now, and the gap is very big. And also, unfortunately, and today also, I appreciate you putting me in an air in this in your show, because also it is very minimal media attention. No media attention to the war in Sudan and to the suffering of the people of Sudan for 2 years now. So this is also, it's something, Yani, we really feel that is sad, and the people of Sudan, their lives matters, and their needs are needs to be, Yani, to make some attention to it from the different donors around the world, and from all, Yani, the people who are caring about humanitarian, because humanitarian cannot be, Yani, differentiate between it is, Yani, it is all the people are equal, because we know that, Yani, many other crises or other refugees or IDPs, Yani, there is some attention to their suffering, and we want everyone being, Yani, has problems of war to be helped and to have support. But also we feel like there is discrimination even in attention towards those people who are in need or in need to the humanitarian assistance because of the war and because of all these abuses they've been faced, Yani, during 2 years now. And this war actually in Sudan, unfortunately, it's been going on for a long time, and different wars and for a long time. But this also war, it affected million, as described by the UN. It's 25 million people of Sudan affected by this war. This is why we really, myself also as Zainab organization, as women-led organization, beside working on the ground for service delivery, and to find some ways of helping those people, and especially the women and girls and the children. We also work at advocacy level to highlight the problem and the magnitude and the big problem we have in Sudan, and also the high need for the people of Sudan, which caught in the middle of this war and being killed in hundreds of thousands, even. Yeah, and they just been estimated 150,000 being killed, but no one knows exactly how many of those lives being lost, because they are being bombed by airplane from one side of the warring parties, or by these heavy weapons inside the cities, inside the villages, everywhere, and also all kind of abuses. All those and Sudanese people, million of them, lost everything. And even they are lost, many of them, they've been outside of Sudan for many years. And after that, they established or they built their homes inside Sudan. And now everything is lost from every those Sudanese. And a million of them lost everything, their means of life, their income, income generating activities, whatever they do inside Sudan, it's no more. Besides, also even the in the areas where there is no big fight, which is very small area, Eastern Sudan, and three states in Eastern Sudan and two states Northern Sudan, which is River Nile and Northern State. Before the changes with during the last months in Khartoum and Jazeera, those are the area where no fight, big fight, but also the hosting communities in this area lost they don't have that much, because even the people at the civilian, they have employees to the government, like teachers, or they don't have salaries for all this year, many of those civil servants in Sudan. This is why even the hosting communities are in real need. Besides, there were many of those diseases yani, spread all over Sudan, like cholera, like malaria, and all kind, different kind of disease. And unfortunately, because of the war, 80% of the health institutions, like hospitals or clinics, or all this, it's been destroyed and outside surface. So this is make also in terms of health issue is very complicated for Sudanese people. No medicine, no health, no health institutions to accommodate their health issues. So this is really makes the suffering more, and really people of Sudan are suffering for 2 years now, and now this war also targeted beside no education. I have to say that, because this is one of the issue really make me feel very sad, that 9 million kids outside the school for 2 years now. Because many of those in area of the fight, and also in area no fights, these schools being used as IDBs areas, which is actually is not good also for IDBs. When it was a school, it was not a good environment in this school, and it's been now accommodated thousands of refugees, of IDBs inside Sudan. Also, the people went outside Sudan in different areas in Uganda or Egypt. The people who are, they don't have good income, or they are not rich, they couldn't be able to make their children to go for school, because they cannot pay for this private school in Egypt or in other parts. And also, as Zainab organization, we work for refugees. I was in Egypt for a long time and back and forth. And we've been able to support some of schools called community schools. It is being established or can be established by UNHCR, but they don't support the running fees or anything, but they can give accreditation. So as Zainab also, we've been able to support many of those schools and to make it really possible for thousands of kids to go to school, even high school, in different part of Cairo, and also in other part of Egypt. So this is really, the situation is very complicated until now, and it's going on for Sudanese inside or outside. And still very minimal attention in terms of resource mobilization, in terms of even, as I mentioned, media attention, so people can know what is going on in Sudan and if they can help or they can make pressure to their respected governments or private donors to pay attention to Sudan and to help the people of Sudan. This is why I've been also advocating with many Sudanese women leaders and others find this attention, and also to demand that the whole world to help us to stop this war, because this fight is just at the expense or affecting the civilian more than anyone. And also to protect the civilians, because those civilians for 2 years caught in the middle of this fight from all parties, all casualties from civilians, is even they are not countable, but they're talking about hundreds of thousands. And also to mobilize the necessary resources fund these local initiatives and first responders on the ground who are doing very good, and they are doing all possible during this war. And also to fund the UN agencies, because even in Cairo, when I go for to ask about anything to the UNHCR, which is supposed to be responsible of refugees is very minimal. Even the protection side is not fulfilled by the UNHCR, and all the excuses, they have very minimal resources for people of Sudan. They only, when the first they keep saying they have only 25% from the budget, again, they said, no, it is only 1250. But actually, even OSHA, the United Nations Agency for Humanitarian Aid, just last month, they issue also a report that they said they have only 6% of the humanitarian needed resources for Sudan to support Sudanese people or to fund all for UN agencies. So this is why it is really a dilemma for Sudanese people, especially who are at the front line and who are trying to help that. Resources is needed for all international organizations, for UN agencies, so they can help the Sudanese people inside Sudan as IDPs and even the hosting communities, because everyone in needs now, and also to for refugees outside Sudan. I can stop here.
Thank you, Fatima, for that report on what's happening in Sudan. I don't envy you for the work that you have to do. And I also, for those of you who are just tuning in, I'm speaking with Fatima Ahmed of the organization Zainab, which works with women, Sudanese women, specifically Sudanese women and girls, under the worst conditions, especially since the war has basically has accelerated in the past 2 years. Fatima, just to, if you could briefly explain to those who don't know the recent history of what happened. For example, there was a time where they were reporting on Sudan when there was the first uprising against the regime, and it was actually women led, there was a lot of women that are leading, and therefore like the image of the Sudanese woman standing on the car and addressing the people was an image that was passed around the world, and showing that these uprisings that are happening, whether it is in Sudan, at the time there was also Algeria and Lebanon were having similar uprisings. Now that was snuffed out or destroyed or stopped by the military. And we heard the stories we heard on this end is that the military basically started, oppressing the people, and all the demands there when they were supposed to be a transitional government, the demands during that time were not fulfilled. And one of those demands was actually, we heard also that it was for the reunification of Sudan. Then as of 2 years ago, as you mentioned, things changed. Can you talk about what happened 2 years ago that things even got worse?
Okay. Yes, actually, as you mentioned, we have this revolution started in 2018, end of the year. And by 2019, we get the dictatorship regime of al-Bashir being thrown after 30 years. And this revolution, as we make say it, it is a female led and youth definitely also from female and male, but female has also a big contribution to this revolution. And we were celebrating that, and the whole world were celebrating with us, and we were hoping and we were very optimistic that this is going to lead to civil governments in Sudan, because since the independence of Sudan, the civil or democratic governments was not only the independent almost now 70 years, and only 16 years is democratic governments, and other is on dictatorship. Even myself, when I was in the University of Jazeera in 1980s, we are also as women or as female students, and I was at the student union, I was the only female at the student union among 19 boys, we were led also the uprising against dictatorship of Nimeiri regime, which was also holding the government for 16 years, since 69, from 1969 to 1985. And after that, it came the democratic government led by the president Sadiq al-Mahdi, and this has been actually was thrown by the 1989 by the Bashir government. So this gives you some that the youth or the women also as at the leading that always for uprising and for change in Sudan. And because we really as women or as female in Sudan they are always in the front line for change in Sudan. So unfortunately, after the civil governments, the transition civil governments, we all celebrated as the beginning of to have democratic transition government, which lead to election, so we can have another elected democratic government in Sudan to make all the necessary changes and to manage the resources of Sudan wisely and without any corruption. Because as you may know, and I hope that also a listener to this show to know that Sudan is really rich with resources. We have everything. We have agriculture land, which is million of hectares. We have livestock, millions of of the third, maybe number three in Africa in terms of livestock, all kind of livestock, sheep, camel, all cows, everything. We have minerals, gold and all kind of minerals in Sudan. We have water, the Nile, and good rainy season. So we supposed to be very rich country, and if there was good management to these resources and people of Sudan can live good life, no poverty, no poor people, because if there is justice and social justice and good distribution of the resources. Unfortunately, this is why we were very optimistic that the transition government can lead to election and people of Sudan end the cycle of this coup from the army side every couple of they don't give chance to the democratic governments. During the transition governments, there was some steps to be done. So this is can lead to the stability and to make some changes so people can be ready for election. During this, during the transition governments, one of the most important topic was being discussed is the number of the army, because the Sudanese Fourth Army sponsor this, now they call it militia, the IRSF. It was found by Bashir government to fight in Darfur, to fight those Western army groups who were fighting Bashir governments. And this RSF being established because of that at the border with Chad and these areas. And after that, it's been called to come to Khartoum and being empowered. And the civilians and the people always talking about this is going to be dangerous because maybe one day they will fight. And this is exactly what happened. And that the Bashir government and even the other army leaders who are in charge with the transition governments, they always keep talking that know the RSF is part of the army, and they have legislation to make it yani, legitimate and all this kind. But always the transition government and all the civilians in Sudan, they were very panic, including myself. What is this is gonna, yani, one day is going to be a big problem. And this is exactly what happened when they have compete for this chair or who is going to rule, or I mean, and as yani, it's been not yani, secret is the even the previous government, the ruling party, the Congress party, have something to do with this, because also they have unfortunately the army is being yani, ideologized, and also this is one of the things that people talking about, like civilian people or transition government, that the army has to be independent, and this is unfortunately is not being any change. And when those two yani, armies in Sudan or in Khartoum, when they are not in agreement, and mainly there is competition between them yani, for to rule or to have the resources or this, they bring this the war started. But as even all of us as advocates, as civil advocates, we been calling for one army in Sudan, one army independent and no affiliated to any group or any yani, party, political party. This is can save Sudan. But unfortunately, this is exactly what happened because of these two army inside Khartoum actually became this war. It started when they are in not in agreement.
Mm-hmm. And one factor we've been hearing about, not because our mainstream media is reporting any of this, but because of social media from people on the ground, is the involvement of the United Arab Emirates. Why are they interested? Why is the United Arab Emirates interested in this? And why are they supporting the RSF in their brutal campaign against the Sudanese people?
Yes, actually, because also is the fight for the resources. United Arab Emirates has number one benefit from the gold from Sudan, because the gold in Sudan, unfortunately, the RSF has actually mountain in Western Sudan of gold and other part of Sudan, and is being given to them by the previous government. The government empowers the RSF. So this is now is one of the big issue is the gold, because they have this. And also, I think when they have the Emirates and Saudi Arabia have this war against Yemen, in Yemen, RSF dispatched hundreds of thousands of army to them for of those yani, army people. So there is benefits between them in different ways. But let me also say, yani, say only Emirates. Unfortunately, the war in Sudan also there is regional interest. Other countries also support SAF. Also, and some countries support Emirates, not only at the regional level, now also at global level. There is big interest in the resources of Sudan, and all now is fighting yani, at regional interest or as global interest.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Fatima. This was so informative, and we hope to have you back on when hopefully things change for the better.
Hopefully.
It was very informative and very helpful, because we are really starved for information. We hear horrible stories here and there, but we don't know the full story. And we especially hear the stories when they're impacting women in such a mass way. But also happy to hear also about these neighborhood groupings that have formed to support, to basically to form mutual aid for women and the community at large.
Yes, thank you so much, really, Zain, for this. And I hope people, they can pay attention to Sudan and the necessary resources can reach the people of Sudan who are really in the same need like Gaza, if not worse. Absolutely. We want the Gaza people to be held and our hearts with Gaza and everything. But really, the people of Sudan also suffering a lot and long time without any attention.
Right. Now we have three countries competing for the greatest humanitarian crisis
yes.
of our time. You know, we yes. have Gaza, we have Sudan, and we have Yemen.
Yes, unfortunately. Yeah, we hope this will change. Yeah, inshallah. Thank you so much, Zain.
Of course. And before you go, Fatima, can you give the listeners where they can go to the website to learn more about the organization?
Our website?
Yeah, or any contact information where they can find out more.
Yes, it's zainab.org, Z Zebra, E Edward, N Nancy, A Abel, B Boy.org, www.zainab.org. We have our website, there is contact information, and also this is not updated soon, but and because of we are busy with many things, but we will be updated, but it gives all the basic information on what Zainab is doing, the establishment, and all the information, they can find in the website.
Excellent. Again, it's www.zainab.org.
Yes.
So that you'll know what Fatima is talking about. That's her organization. Thank you, Fatima.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Zain. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Let's listen to more Sara and the Nubutones. Al Sara and the Nubutones. Al Watan. Fantastic Sudanese band based in Brooklyn, actually. Look out for them coming to your corner of the world. This is Zain Al-Amin signing out with the Shai Nana Show. We will be broadcasting again the show next Wednesday at 2 p.m., 2 to 3 p.m., as we do every week. Thank you for listening.
WPFW commemorates the birthday of James Joseph Brown on May 3rd from 7 a.m. to midnight. Revolution of the Mind, Unpacking the Genius and Torment of James Brown, will feature his music, delve into his complicated and tumultuous family history and sometimes troubling behavior, and celebrate his artistic, entrepreneurial, and activist legacy, including James's live performances in Ghana, Zambia, and Zaire, present-day DRC. That's Revolution of the Mind, Unpacking the Genius and Torment of James Brown, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 a.m. to midnight on WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time. Full schedule found on WPFWFM.org.
WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, April 30th. Here are some headlines. Moshe Madawi, a Palestinian student at Columbia University and a green card holder who was detained by immigration authorities when he went to his U.S. citizenship interview, has been released after a federal judge's order in Vermont. Madawi was taken into custody on April 16th. His immigration case remains open, and there will be another hearing tomorrow. Madawi's attorneys argued that the Trump administration is seeking to deport Madawi because he helped lead pro-Palestinian protests on Columbia University's campus, and that government officials violated his First Amendment right to free speech and his right to due process. In his ruling, Judge Jeffrey Crawford stated that the evidence before the government failed to demonstrate any legitimate interest in Mr. Madawi's continued confinement and that, quote, his continued detention would likely have a chilling effect on protected speech, close quote. In more news, the Supreme Court heard arguments today in a pivotal case over whether Oklahoma may establish the nation's first taxpayer-funded religious charter school. The proposed school, St. Isidore of Seville Catholic Virtual School, would offer K-12 instruction infused with Catholic doctrine and operated by the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City and the Diocese of Tulsa. The Supreme Court's conservative majority seemed open today to backing the school, and if that's what the court decides, it would expand the availability of taxpayer money for religious education in schools systems across the nation. The court's liberal justices raised concerns about how religious charter schools could favor one religion over another, but there was no clear indication that any conservative members of the court would join them to vote against allowing the school. In more news, the U.S. economy contracted in the first 3 months of 2025 as businesses rushed to stock up on imports ahead of tariffs. New data from the Commerce Department reveals that the U.S. gross domestic product, which is the value of all goods and services produced across the economy, decreased by 0.3% in the first quarter of 2025. This is the lowest and first negative GDP reading since the second quarter of 2022. The data will likely add to fears that the U.S. could slide into recession if there is a prolonged trade war. Polling shows voters are increasingly pessimistic about the economic outlook, fearing higher grocery prices and a recession in particular. Meanwhile, the Senate appears on track to once again reject tariffs imposed by President Trump's sweeping tariff agenda, with several key Republican senators confirming that they will vote today to overturn